Welcome back. It's a Tuesday, the 28th and final day of February 2023. I'm your host, Mark Hall, and let's start off our look at what the heck is going on around the nation and the world with kind of a shotgun approach to a number of stories coming out of the first major World War III front. Here's one from MSN, so take it with a grain of salt. Russia's northern capital of St. Petersburg, it says, has closed its airspace, grounded all planes that haven't yet taken off, and is turning away inbound flights, according to reports on the morning of February the 28th. Although authorities have given no information as to the reason for the emergency measures, but BNE and Telenews staff report that fighter jets have been scrambled and are flying over the city, according to telephone calls from residents in the city. From Zero Hedge, Russia has come under attacks by multiple drones on Tuesday after the reported destruction of a $250 million version of their own AWACS plane over the weekend. One of the latest drones reportedly caused a fire at an oil depot in the southern part of the country, another hit outside Moscow. The first attack happened at Tuapse, about 150 miles southeast of the Crimean Peninsula, where emergency services put out a fire after a drone was spotted flying overhead, said the RIA news agency on Tuesday. And critically, notes the piece, Tuapse is about 500 kilometers from the nearest Ukrainian-held territory, meaning there's a significant reach, assuming the UAV was launched by the Ukrainians, or at least somebody pulling their puppet strings. Another drone crashed in the region of Moscow on the same day, with Governor Andrei Vorobyov saying it was likely an operation to target civilian infrastructure. The Russian Defense Ministry also said the Kiev regime attempted to use unmanned aerial vehicles to attack civilian infrastructure in the Krasnodar region and the Adya Republic, claiming further that the UAVs were neutralized by electronic warfare units. Says the Zero Hedge summary, the timing of these fresh brazen attacks on Russia appears significant given that within just the last few days there's been some actual international momentum developing toward getting serious about an eventual brokered peace. This after China unveiled their 12-point plan for a negotiated ceasefire on Friday. Looks like somebody, folks, is intent to avoid peace at any cost. Next, a couple of more inside baseball stories on World War III, courtesy of the Hal Turner radio show. The first one says, a statement by the Russian Foreign Ministry in connection with the preparation by Kiev of military provocation against a Russian enclave called Transnistria at the eastern border of Moldova is attracting some attention. Quote, in connection with the significant accumulation of personnel and military equipment, Ukrainian units, recorded by the Ministry of Defense of the Russian Federation near the border with Transnistria, the deployment of artillery at fire positions, as well as an unprecedented increase in flights of unmanned aircraft of the armed forces over the territory of Transnistria, we warn the United States, NATO member countries, and their Ukrainian wards from the next adventurous steps. Now, this notes the story after the reports of some 15,000 to 20,000 Ukrainian troops massing at the border over the weekend. And it also follows another official warning via an op-ed piece in the state-run newspaper Izvestia by former Russian President Dmitry Medvedev, where he reiterated his country's threat of outright nuclear war if the West continues to supply arms to Ukraine, saying that the pumping in of weapons can and would prevent any, quote, possibility of reviving negotiations, and added, our enemies are doing just that, not wanting to understand that their goals obviously lead to a total fiasco. Everyone loses. A collapse, apocalypse, when the former life will have to be forgotten for centuries until the rubble ceases to emit radiation, unquote. Likewise, the official statement from the Foreign Ministry said, and not for the first time, that they consistently advocate the solution of any issues in a political and diplomatic way, but at the same time, no one should have any doubt that the armed forces of the Russian Federation will adequately respond to provocation from Kiev. And if one does follow, any attacks that pose a threat to the security of those groups will be considered in accordance with international law as an attack on the Russian Federation. A related story here says that starting March the 14th, Wizz Air has announced they're going to suspend all flights to Moldova, which means something is up, says the story. Corporations seem to be getting the heads up. And writes Hal Turner, I'd bet on a second front in the conflict with Ukraine. Part of the reason for the interest seems to be there's a large Soviet-era weapons depot in Transnistria with about 20,000 tons of weaponry and ammunition, and that, of course, would be a really big deal if Ukraine could get their hands on it. And this is perhaps why corporations are getting the heads up to get out of Moldova. Watch, he says, to see whether or not other airlines follow suit. Next, a couple of stories that you might even call head shakers. After China has demanded that the United States, quote, explain itself to the world over the most recent claims of the obvious, confirmed famously and lately by Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Seymour Hersh, that the United States and or NATO blew up the Nord Stream pipelines, Hungary has now added its voice to a call to the United Nations for a full and proper investigation. As if the United Nations could actually be trusted to do an investigation and tell anybody the truth. Hungarian Foreign Minister Peter Szijjártó told RIA Novosti, quote, this is basically the first time when such a major European critical infrastructure was attacked by whoever, but it was attacked. He noted that the sabotage was a scandalous act of terrorism, or some might say outright war, folks. And he added, the truth as to finding out who was responsible should be of the utmost international importance. And as Paul Joseph Watson notes, the former NSA whistleblower Ed Snowden has responded to the White House denial that so-called U.S. intelligence agencies had anything to do with blowing up the Nord Stream pipelines by pointing out that the same agencies once denied involvement in things like the Bay of Pigs invasion and a whole bunch of other false flags. Here's another one of those head shakers, courtesy of Alexandra Bruce, via places like Forbidden Knowledge TV and LouRockwell.com. The CDC has now confirmed what a lot of people had already figured out, that a majority of the fatal, outright fatal, that is, COVID vaccines were knowingly sent to, guess where? Trump-supporting red states. And it includes the latest video by Greg Reese, which notes that last year they published a report entitled Evidence that U.S. Government Targeted Red States with Deadly Batches of the So-Called Vaccine, a story that most so-called news outlets ignored. Private leaked documents, though, from the CDC showed a list of expiry dates, and only certain lots were included. And those same lots were found to be highly toxic with Party Cooper's database, and the mode of deployment allowed Big Brother the ability to direct deadly batches into specific populations, i.e. red states, where analysis of the number of deaths per 100,000 poison-poked individuals in all 50 states shows that the overwhelming majority of short-term vaccine deaths happened in the so-called red states. But now, an update says we have a more robust and far more damning view of this carefully distributed depopulation scheme. Back in October 2021, the exposé published a report on data found in the USA's VAERS, or Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, revealing that 100% of COVID-19 short-term vaccine deaths had been caused by just 5% of the batches that were able to be identified, and they weren't distributed evenly. The top eight states with the highest vaccination death rate included Kentucky, Arkansas, West Virginia, Montana, Alaska, North Dakota, Wyoming, and Tennessee. And guess who they voted for in the last election? While the least affected states were the most communist, like California. In fact, Kentucky had a 1,900% worse short-term vaccination death rate than Democrat-controlled California, suggesting that the Republican red state got about 20 times the amount of deadly batches of COVID-19 vaccine than the far-left communist enclave on the left coast. Likewise, even Florida, number 20 on the list, got about 3 times the amount of deadly batches than California and has a vaccination death rate that's 200% higher than the CCP partner state. And again, the author notes that these deadly batches should be classified as either rapid kill lots or slow kill lots because now we're seeing all kinds of deaths all across the spectrum. And guess what? As just about everybody's figured out, and the author here notes, people of America are under attack by their own government. We've seen the latest example out of Ohio. And they're not going to quit until they either accomplish their goals or are outright stopped. I guess next I got a couple more related stories. They all at least seem to impinge on that same idea of the biggest bioweapon deployment in human history. Oh yeah, and let's not forget some of the smokescreen that surrounds it. Like, if you don't want to take the poison poke, no matter what color you are, you're almost certainly racist, racist, racist. Here's one from Jim Hofton, the Gateway Pundit, about a Christian nurse who was suspended from the British NHS certification program after she said the following, and ooh, this is going to resonate throughout some of the other stories we have today. Being white doesn't make you racist, but of course it may well end up making you unemployed. Amy Gallagher said she was harassed and bullied by the woke leftist staff, and that left her with crippling anxiety. Lecturers at NHS in Britain also taught that Christianity is responsible for racism because, quote, it's European. And as a result, Amy Gallagher is now bringing a lawsuit against the Tavistock Trust, where she took the so-called course. And at least so far, she's now able to tweet about it. The lawsuit notes that one of Tavistock's seminars was even called, get this, whiteness, a problem for our time, and included a description on the Trust website that, quote, the problem of racism is a problem of whiteness. When she challenged these controversial views, it says in the class, and they're not controversial, folks, let's be honest here, they're real, outright, in-your-face, undeniable racism. But if you say that, ooh-hoo, it's whiteness, and you're a racist. And while that's true in general, it's especially true if, you know, you're the wrong color. She was bullied by staff and suspended from the course, pending an investigation into whether or not she's even safe to be allowed to work with patients. But as of yet, and this probably shouldn't surprise anybody paying attention, there has been no such investigation, and, well, guess what that means for her. Her dream of becoming a psychotherapist is hanging by a thread. And further, the course lecturer is trying to get her banned from her day job as a practicing mental health nurse. All right, I was going to save this next one for later, but actually it fits in several places, and this will work just as well as any. This comes from several of the far-left so-called news sites like CNN, The WAPO, New York Times, and others. And guess what? There's a common thread here. Newspapers across the country, says CNN, though, have dropped the Dilbert comic strip, one of the most popular comic strips in history, folks, over this last weekend, after the creator of the satirical cartoon went on what they call, oh yeah, a racist tirade. In other words, folks, the kind of thing you can see on leftist TV just about every weekday. But it's just directed at people of a different color, and that makes it okay. And at this point, I'm going to depart from the text from the official Ministry of Truth and tell you first what the guy actually said, which they eventually get around to with some significant editing. But long after they tell you what he meant, whether that's really what he meant or not. The move, it says, came after Scott Adams, cartoonist behind Dilbert, effectively encouraged segregation, oh really, in a shocking, at least to them, rant on YouTube. And his comments, listen carefully here, came in response to a poll from the conservative firm, it's conservative if they find something that Big Brother and his minions don't like, the Rasmussen Reports, which did a poll and found that 53% of black Americans agreed with this statement. It's okay to be white. Think about that for just a second. Actually, a tiny majority of black Americans actually agree with the shocking statement that it's okay to be white. I wonder how many white Americans would agree that it's okay to be black. Folks, this is beyond the pale, pun intended. And I agree, it is a bit surprising that political correctness has gone so far over the top into wacko land that a bare majority of people of any ethnicity would agree that it's barely, it sounds, okay to be of any other ethnicity. Well, no, specifically, that it's okay to be white. And I think, really, let's admit it, that probably would be a smaller majority than any other race you could name. Certainly so far as the propaganda press is concerned. And on this score, I guess I have to admit, I think I'm with Scott Adams. They call racism anti-racism. Just like the anti-fascists have proven, they're now calling anti-racism racism. The Anti-Defamation League has noted that the phrase emerged on the infamous message board 4chan as a trolling campaign, and okay to be white has a, get this, long history in the white supremacist movement. This from one of the most racist organizations on planet Earth. Uh-oh, can I even say that? In your host's opinion, and that's certainly based on long observation, too. Why, I'd even go so far as to say they're almost as overtly over-the-top racist as the Southern Poverty Law Center, to the point where maybe the only thing that either of them is more than racist is communist. Yeah, folks, let's just tell it like it is for a while we still have the chance. Here's what Scott Adams actually said, quote, if nearly half of all blacks are not okay with white people, according to this poll, not according to me, according to this poll, that, he said, is a hate group. This on his Wednesday YouTube show, Real Coffee with Scott Adams. And he added, I don't want anything to do with them. Now, who's he talking about? Yeah, in context, folks, those who don't believe that it's even okay to be white. And he added, I would say, based on the current way things are going, the best advice I would give to white people, he said, is to stay the hell away from, and I do have to bleep some of the next statement, because he said, there is no fixing this. So let me see if I got this straight. He is advising people to stay the blankety-blank away from people who admittedly hate you and don't think it's okay to be whatever it is that you are. Honestly, I can't help but think that sounds like fairly sound advice, no matter who it is that hates you and wants you dead, and I guess arguably we're seeing that writ large all across the country nowadays. asks the people in Ohio and points downwind and downriver who are outright being killed, and all the while they're being lied to. He's since said on Twitter that he has been advising people to avoid hate for a long time, suggesting that the cancellation of his cartoon signals, and gee, who could have imagined such a thing, free speech in America is under assault. And let me say it again, it's not just your free speech, it's your very lives on just about every front you can imagine, and guaranteed a whole lot that people can't. So back to the cancel culture. The USA Today Network, which is a big press oligopoly operating hundreds of newspapers, said it's pulled the plug on the long-running comic strip The WAPO, and the Cleveland Plain Dealer also said they would no longer carry the comic. The editor of That Rag, Chris Quinn, wrote, "This is not a difficult decision." I guess for the left folks, censorship really never is. And yeah, it's fair to wonder, did he really even have a decision to make? And when it comes to pushing racism and telling you they're not, that's not a difficult decision for them either. For his part, and I guess it's at least fair to let Scott Adams speak for himself, he tweeted, "Dilbert has been canceled from all newspapers, websites, calendars, and books because I gave some advice everyone agreed with." He noted that my syndication partner canceled me and added that eventually the comic will be available, but only on his subscription site when everything is sorted out. And here's another one that's not only related, but it's another head shaker. This comes courtesy of Gary Bai via the Epoch Times, and it's also been repeated on Zero Hedge, noting that Republican lawmakers have now responded to a new report saying, I hope you're sitting down for this one, the U.S. Department of Energy had concluded, finally, and years too late, that the lab leak theory, as it's been called, back when it wasn't banned completely, was, well, probably likely. Saying that the finding supports what just about anybody with half a brain has long known. A Wall Street Journal article over the weekend, February 26, reported that the classified intelligence report by the Department of Energy said the virus probably leaked from the Wuhan Institute of Virology. As Jim Jordan, a representative from Ohio, put it, so the government finally caught up to what real America knew all along. Colorado Congressman Ken Buck said the elites and academics owe everyone who had legitimate questions and concerns about the origins of COVID an apology. No, they owe them a lot more than that, folks. They owe some of them their lives back. But the American people, he continued, deserve to see all the information concerning the Chinese lab leak and the origins of COVID. This won't be forgotten, unquote. And as you can probably guess, it's not at all likely to actually happen. By the way, Senator Eric Schmidt of Missouri, in another tweet, noted that Fauci knew this immediately, but dismissed it because of the funding for the Wuhan lab. He said, "We know what happened next. When Fauci spoke, Big Tech censored. I expose this collusion," wrote Schmidt, "as Attorney General, and I'll work to ensure this type of censorship never happens again." Congressman Andy Biggs from Arizona wrote in Twitter on Sunday, "Americans knew all of this from day one, but unfortunately, Big Tech and big government silenced them." And there, folks, just look at the last series of stories, is a pattern we're still seeing far, far too much of. Here's another one. Way late and arguably even too late. This comes from the Epoch Times as well. And it quotes yet another senator, in this case Ron Johnson from Wisconsin, who is expressing dismay, says the piece, over how the Federal Aviation Administration responded or didn't respond to his questions about the agency's handling of pilot health issues. Quote, "How can the FAA maintain safe skies when they turn a blind eye toward pilots experiencing COVID-19 vaccine injuries?" he said in an email sent exclusively to the Epoch Times last week. Is it willful ignorance that the FAA is aware of only 4 active pilots experiencing adverse effects connected to the COVID-19 vaccine? The American people, he said, are not getting the full transparency and honesty from federal agencies that they deserve, unquote, and I'll try to suppress a laugh because that is a drastic understatement. Johnson made these remarks in response to how Susan Northrop, the FAA's federal air surgeon, answered 8 questions surrounding pilot health. And in his 27 January letter to the FAA, Johnson provided specific information about 5 named pilots with suspected COVID-19 vaccine ill effects. One of them died 17 days after being vaccinated. And there are, of course, numerous other accounts of pilots with suspected vaccine injuries. They're included in the VAERS reporting system, as the Epoch Times has previously reported. And a quick aside here, folks, that means there's between 10 and probably closer to 100 times as many pilots actually suffering problems as do get reported, and we all know it. And Johnson says he wants to know just what steps the FAA has taken or planned to take to, are you sitting down, investigate whether or not these five named pilots and others suffered adverse effects after COVID-19 shots. If you've seen the pattern, folks, I think you can answer that question without having to wait for the bureaucrats to gin something up. Still, though, the proper term is CYA. Susan Northrop sidestepped all of that, claiming her agency isn't in charge of that. It's instead the Center for Death and Control, or they call it the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC. That, she said, is the responsible agency for tracking and follow-up of suspected vaccine adverse events. And listen to this absolutely disgusting laugher. Oh, yeah, it's true. It's just one of those lies that has the Clintonian element of truth to it. Northrop said that pilots experiencing any medical issues are required to, quote, ground themselves, seek medical help, and thus basically end their career, and report any significant medical events, unquote. And here's the irony of that, folks. These are the very same pilots that didn't have the huevos to say no to the poison poke in the first place. And that's why they took the Zyklon B to begin with, even though a lot of them no doubt knew the regs and that it was prohibited. But hey, since the FAA isn't going to pay any attention to their own regs and my employer's going to do the dirty deed to me anyway, I guess I better just go along and hope I don't die and kill a whole lot of people in the process. So do you think that the ones that wanted to fly so badly that they were willing to kill themselves are now going to say, oops, I guess now that I have caused myself some severe medical problems, I'm going to quit flying? What do you think? Or maybe they'll just continue doing exactly what the FAA wants them to do, keep their blankety-blankin' mouth shuts and put the flying public at risk. If this doesn't make you mad, again, I've said this for a long time now, but ultimately, aren't we getting to the point where it's obvious? Yeah, if it doesn't make you mad, you're not paying attention. Now, in fairness, one more comment on behalf of the pilots. Remember, the reason why it's called sudden adult death syndrome, or sudden adult pilot death syndrome in this case, more apt, it's because the first symptom is often just keeling over, either unconscious or never to reemerge into consciousness. And that makes it kind of tough to ground yourself beforehand, doesn't it? Let's wrap things up today with a couple of stories from the famine front, starting with this one from Michael Snyder and the Economic Collapse blog, also via Lou Rockwell, about a food industry insider he writes about who warns of contaminated crops. And gee, couldn't you see this one coming? As a result of the East Palestine train wreck and environmental bomb explosion over much of the Ohio River Valley. The horrific environmental disaster, he begins, in East Palestine, Ohio, has contaminated the air, the soil, and the water in much of the region. So he asks how much, if any, of the food that's grown in that part of the country will ever be safe to eat. I hadn't thought about that question too much, he said, until I received a very alarming phone call. One of the people I spoke to during that time was a woman I know personally. I've known her for years, visited with her in her own living room and so forth, so I can vouch for her honesty. She told me that her son-in-law manages three organic food farms in California, Idaho, and Washington State, and that he is now warning family and friends to get ready for severe food shortages, as if we didn't have already enough reason to recognize those were coming, starting this spring. Apparently, there are a number of factors that will cause food supplies to be tighter. Most of them you've heard about on this show, folks, but let's go through the list here. One of the biggest is that the Ohio spill, as some are calling it, has contaminated a whole lot of land and water. So now there's a scramble to try to find clean food, and her son-in-law is receiving lots of phone calls from buyers in the eastern half of the nation wanting to buy whatever his farms are able to produce. Furthermore, says Snyder, we know that some companies have already started to take action due to obvious and rightfully placed concerns about contamination. One grocery store chain has already removed bottled water from store shelves because, quote, it was bottled just 25 miles from the derailment. We also know large numbers of animals are dying, everything from fish to pets to livestock. And how bad is it, you might ask? Well, it's so bad even the EPA has finally and belatedly stopped all shipments of contaminated waste from the disaster site. Meanwhile, of course, there are continuing disasters from all over America, not just food processing facilities and chicken farms being burned out, but last week, three separate fires at Petróleos Mexicanos, or Pemex, facilities, all on the very same historic what-are-the-odds day. Well, within 24 hours, anyway. So I think it's fair, folks, to ask, are you starting to smell a rat or maybe some burning polyvinyl chloride? By the time you smell that, it may be too late. But in any case, pay attention. Start preparing for what is obviously not only coming, but intended to, because it's only going to get worse from here as people realize that it never was an accident to begin with, or even a series of them. Thanks for being with us, and may Yahuwah bless you and yours.